Well, Desnaires foundries are doing pretty well, aren't they?
Clinton riposted and cocked an eyebrow at Ducairne. Production numbers are rising, Ducairne acknowledged. It's not that their individual foundries are especially big or especially efficient, but they do have a higher output per furnace than Harchong, and they've been establishing a lot of little cannon foundries. They're still having problems with iron guns, though. Everybody is. Except for Karras, he carefully did not say out loud. But even more of Desnaire's iron pieces seem to be failing when they're proofed.
That's just a matter of experience, Clinton said dismissively. Of course they're not going to get it right the first few times they try. But if they've got the foundries, sooner or later they'll be able to produce the guns we need.
Why not send them to Dolar instead? Ducairne suggested. Maguire and Trenaire looked thoughtful, but Clinton's face turned expressionless as the shutters went up behind his eyes. Thirsk seems to have straightened out the Dolaran foundries. At least he's been able to compensate for the Harchong guns the Carizians took. By now, according to the invoices I'm getting, he's actually far enough ahead of his own demand that he's in a position to export guns to Harchong instead of the other way around.
Dolar's too far from Taro and Karras, Clinton said flatly, and Ducairne felt one eyebrow arch.
He glanced at Trenaire and saw the same speculation on the Chancellor's face. Just as Clinton had never truly been prepared to give Gorgia of Taro a clean bill of health over the betrayal of the Group of Four's original plan of attack, he'd never forgiven Thirsk for first losing the Battle of Crag Reach and then surrendering his surviving ships to Caleb Armok. The Dolaran ought to have fought until every one of his galleys went to the bottom, in Clinton's opinion. The fact that he hadn't, that he'd put the lives of his men above his service to Mother Church, made him automatically and permanently suspect to the Grand Inquisitor. Clinton had acquiesced only grudgingly in Thirsk's appointment to his present post, and only when all three other members of the Group of Four had voted against him. And he bitterly resented Thirsk's demands that Mother Church pay the wages of his sailors. As far as Clinton was concerned, those sailors should be eager to volunteer in God's own cause. Besides, the Church had dozens of other things it could have used that money for. And that didn't even consider Thirsk's ridiculous insistence that the Church ought to pay pensions to the survivors of men who were killed in her service. The Grand Inquisitor hadn't been happy when Ducairne supported Thirsk's policies. Having the Church's treasurer agree that the outrageous demands were reasonable and manageable had cut the ground out from under his own arguments. Maguire's unusually stubborn insistence that Thirsk had the best grasp of the new naval tactics hadn't made him any more cheerful. And rather than agreeing with Ducairne and Maguire that Thirsk's performance in the Harchong Narrows demonstrated that the Earl had been right all along, Clinton sided with the opinion, coming, Ducairne suspected, from Duke Thorast, that Thirsk had simply been lucky. Lucky in the weather, lucky in outnumbering the Carizians by such a huge margin, and, probably, lucky the Carizians had withdrawn from Claw Island before he was finally ready to attack it, since they would undoubtedly have defeated him, again, if he'd actually had to fight to evict them. Only the fact that the Duke of Fern and Bishop Stiphon Mike, Clinton's own intendant for the fleet, strongly supported Thirsk, had held the Grand Inquisitor's ire in check. Well, that and the fact that Thirsk's victory was the only victory any of the Church's squadrons had so far achieved.
And as far as I can tell, the fact that Thirsk allowed the Carizians to surrender has only pissed him off even more.
Ducairne very carefully did not grimace.
As far as Jaspar's concerned, the only good Carizian is a dead one. He sees absolutely no reason Thirsk should have let them surrender. Even Elaine understands that if our admirals don't allow them to surrender, then their admirals won't allow our crews to surrender. I don't think Jaspar really cares about that, though. In fact, I wonder if he wouldn't actually prefer a situation in which the other side flatly refused to give quarter. He probably sees it as the best way to motivate our people to fight to the bitter end, exactly the way Thirsk didn't do at Crag Reach.
I admit Dolar's a long way from Karis and Taro, the treasurer said. On the other hand, as Elaine says, our ships are scattered all over the passage, and nothing the Carizians have is close enough to threaten the passage.
We could send them all away to Gorath Bay without having to worry about their being intercepted.
And Dolar's much closer to Chisholm, and Coruscant for that matter, going west.
Of course it is.
Clinton waved an impatient hand dismissively.
And the Carizians who evacuated Claw Island went straight to Chisholm to reinforce the ships they already had there. In fact, that's another reason to send our ships to Desnair.
Ducairne looked at him quizzically, and he snorted.
They've had to disperse strength to cover Chisholm and Coruscant, Robert.
Clinton was back to that adult lecturing a particularly slow child tone of his, but Ducairne was too accustomed to it to rise to the baiting. For that matter, he wasn't even certain Clinton was still doing it on purpose.
Our best estimate is that Rock Point has about 20 or 25 galleons based on Thole Bay, and Lock Island has another 35 or 40 operating out of Rockshoal Bay. That's 65 total. The rest of their galleons are dispersed, protecting Chisholm and Coruscant. What I'm proposing is that we take advantage of that dispersal to punch our ships through to Desnair. By the time they can redeploy the ships they have on distant stations, we'll be concentrated in the Gulf of Matthias, and there won't be anything they can do about it.